Mr. Hawkins is the Second Amendment columnist at Breitbart News, and he holds a Ph.D. in military history from Texas Tech and a master's in U.S. history from West Texas A&M and Aggie. He is the political analyst for Armed American Radio, and he likes to open carry a 1911 that was built out of parts and has no serial number, and I believe he will have it on. Mr. Hawkins is also going to do something kind of unusual for our speakers, for our keynote speakers. We've set up an audience microphone, and he would like to take your questions as he's going to speak for a little while, and he's going to open the floor to your questions. We usually don't do that. We've done one panel, I believe it was last year or the year before, we did a discussion panel, and we took some questions from the audience. But generally speaking, we don't. At this portion of the program, we don't usually do audience call, but AWR is going to speak, and he's going to have his, and he's going to open it up to the audience, and he'll be in just a minute. So, excuse me. I'd like to encourage you to keep an eye on the silent auction through the bid cards and bid on your phone, and then at the end, take care of it with a credit card. You can also pay through that same app on your phone for the, if you win the silent auction, and that will greatly aid the speed of getting out of here at the end of the meeting. We do have to have the room cleared by 5. The meeting ends at 4, and we have to have the room cleared by 5. So we're going to do one more a door prize, and let's see. Okay. Now, let me ask you something. We have some silver up here for door prizes. Come on up if you won the prize. And let me ask the winner, are you a fan of Smith & Wesson products? Just the winner, I'm asking. You are? Yes? Okay, come on up and get something. I got something really cool. I doubt that anybody past the first row can see this, but I go to a local coin shop here, Tucson Coin and Autograph. They're my client on the radio, and I'm their client. And they got me a really beautiful... Oh, it's you!
Oh, and you even brought Smith & Wesson, right? 9787, that's it. Smith & Wesson, right. 1 ounce silver.
Thank you.
He's in good health.
He even brought his dogs with him, Smith and Wesson. Okay, do we have AWR in the room yet? Oh, you're here. There you are. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I already did his intro. Mr. AWR Hawkins, please come to the stage. And those are your... Oh.
Is that the animal?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Where can I get them to sit?
They're going to sit right here with us, right. And we've got their dinners being warmed.
Oh, thank you.
Woo! How are y'all? Hadley. Howdy. I had to kill some of that wind. That's all right. Hope you are doing good. Good to be with you. I'm AWR. I do Second Amendment for Breitbart News. And good to come in here. Glad you all like Breitbart. I was asked to talk about where we are with the Second Amendment right now. And in order to do that, we really have to use, it's going to seem like I'm cheating, but we have to use as a jumping point December 15th, 1791. I'm sure you're pretty familiar with what happened then. That's when the Second Amendment was ratified. And that's really our jumping point. And do notice that I said 1791, not 1971. I know you all know that, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people have no idea the type of antiquity we're dealing with when we talk about gun rights and the Second Amendment and other things. Let me read this to you. I know you've heard it. I know you've read it. And you've probably all got it memorized, but just for the sake of reading it. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's a very important amendment. Very important. And what we need to understand is 1791, that's a long time ago, but at the same time, it's not that long ago. But it was a time when there were men of the sort who were willing to give and to pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor for what they knew was true. That alone divides them quite a bit from the time in which we live. A couple of points need to be made about the Second Amendment before we can go any further. And those points are, number one, what does it do? Number two, what does it not do? All right? The Second Amendment protects, as you know, and if you don't know, I'm glad you're here because you're getting ready to know. The Second Amendment protects an individual right to keep and bear arms. All right? Understand that. There are two avenues you can take on a right. You can view it as individual, or you can view it as collective. It's very hard, in my mind, to find a collective right. But an individual right is, you find them throughout the Bill of Rights. And the Second Amendment, the rights it protects, are among those. All right. Now, the Supreme Court, as you know, reaffirmed this in 2008. The left goes just freaking nuts on this case, you know, D.C. v. Heller. They can't handle it. And they say that the Supreme Court, that's when Scalia invented the individual right. People on the left are nuts, by the way. They say that's when they invented the individual right. What? No, the Supreme Court didn't invent anything. They reaffirmed things that already existed. And that's important, all right? Let me share a couple of things with you. I know you're familiar with this name, but I want you to think about this quote. Enlightenment philosopher John Locke, he was very impactful, particularly on Thomas Jefferson, but on other founding fathers too. And this is what Locke wrote. This helps you understand our framers and our founders' worldview when they wrote the documents they wrote. Locke wrote this: "Man being born with a perfect title to freedom and an uncontrolled enjoyment of all the rights and privileges of the law of nature, equally with any other man or any number of men, has by nature a power to preserve his property, that is, his life, liberty, and estate against the injuries and attempts of other men." I know it's hard when you read things. Sometimes when you're listening, it's hard to follow with that. But what you heard Locke say is there is a law of nature. What flows from that law of nature are natural rights. One of those natural rights is the right to protect what's yours from those who want to take it. Right? Now, that's a quick summary, but he said this, listen, in his words, that we have the power to preserve property, that is, our lives, liberty, and estate against the injuries and attempts of other men. What I always like about Locke, and any of you who have not read John Locke, you need to, his second treatise of government, I believe if you get the abridged version, it's only 80 pages long, maybe 90. You know, I'm not telling you to read. I'm not saying go buy a book for third graders. I'm not trying to say that, but I'm saying you can get into reading these people real easy. That's what I'm saying. And if you'll read Locke's Second Treatise of Government, you're reading a man who looked at nature the way a preacher looks at the Bible. Locke looked at nature and he unpeeled it for us. And he says, look, just from nature, I learn that you have a right to defend what's yours from anyone who attacks you. You have that right. All right? And that's something that pressed down on Thomas Jefferson really hard. Now, again, here's what Locke said. To protect our life, liberty, and estate. That brings back the words Jefferson wrote, doesn't it? The words he put in the Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Those of you who are students of history already know, James Madison when he looked at the pursuit of happiness, in his mind, that meant the pursuit of property. So I have John Locke saying life, liberty, and estate. I have Thomas Jefferson saying life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I know in the background that James Madison is saying life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. So that idea of that estate or of having things that are our own, that was integral to the founders' worldview. And you find it there in John Locke. And you see it confirmed in Thomas Jefferson and in Madison, if you'll take time to read him. All right? Now, there's also this guy. We've got to throw him in. Oxford Law Professor William Bradford. If you haven't read him, he's a little harder to read because of the type of English he wrote in. But guess what? It's worth it. If you'll read William Bradford, you'll find him take John Locke a step further. John Locke referred to natural rights. Bradford called those absolute rights. Now, anybody know why Bradford called them absolute rights instead of natural rights? Not trying to make anyone feel dumb, but does anybody know? Well, that's one reason. No man could take them. But that's also true of natural rights. He called them absolute because he said they came from one who is absolute. Right? That's very important. I taught at the university a while before I worked at Breitbart. I wanted to jump out a window, by the way, but I got through it for a few years. And let me tell you this. People do not understand, and the left has been very successful, they do not understand that their rights are grounded in God. Now, if you lose that, y'all ought to just get together and eat lunch and go back home because you're wasting your time if you don't understand that, right? You have to understand. Jefferson said that these are self-evident truths. What? We were endowed by who? Not the Senate, not the House, not the President, by the Creator, right? And so you've got William Bradford, whom Jefferson quoted at least two times more than he quoted Locke. William Bradford comes along, and instead of saying natural rights, he says absolute rights. Because they came from him who is absolute, therefore the rights are absolute. Now, we'll get to this later, but Beto O'Rourke is not going to like that. All right? Because it was just this week he reaffirmed his belief that they are not absolute. All right? But anyway, I don't want to get ahead of myself or too far afield. So you see what we're doing here, what we have. We have an individual right. We have founders who understood it was an individual right. We have founders who were influenced by men who understood our rights were grounded in God, that they flowed from God through nature to man. That's the worldview out of which our founders wrote documents like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. All right. Now look, it's pretty easy to sit back, and I'm not saying any of you all would do it, but maybe some of you do. It's easy to sit back and go, I hear you citing all these people, but how do you know that's what they thought? How do you know it? You just kind of conjecture there. Look at James Madison in Federalist 46. James Madison's celebrating. Somebody knows. Federalist 46, why is James Madison celebrating? Because Americans are armed.
Right here. Bam.
I saw all y'all walking around. I know you have them too. I'm just saying. That's why he was celebrating. He said that's an advantage that the citizens of this country have over citizens of nearly any other country, is that they're armed. And then he went a little further, didn't he? He said, what does being armed allow them to do? Now, so we've already covered from Locke and Bradford that being armed allows me to defend my life and property. I already know that. But see, if you look at Madison, he goes and says, well, there's also another application here. Being armed lets you repel your government if it becomes tyrannical. I mean, you can say that in a room and you want to hear jaws drop. You know, I've watched people dare to say it on what you would call the establishment media, and the pushback they get is unbelievable. And that's a sign of the lack of education in this country. Because it's very clear from our founders' writings, they wanted the people to be armed so they could repel a tyranny, period. That's why you've got to be armed. You know, people, by the time I was being educated, they were already teaching me that the checks on overreach were the House, the Senate, and then, of course, the judiciary. Those were the three checks, right? In that checks and balance system. What did they leave out? The most important check, the folks. The folks who have a 1911, an AR-15, an AK-47, a Ruger 10-22, a Glock 19, I don't care what it is, the folks are armed. And that's what James Madison said is awesome. If you read Federalist 46, I'll summarize it this way. Americans are exceptional because armed. And for any of you who don't know, who may have come here maybe with a friend or who have not read a lot of historical stuff on this, the Federalist Papers were a group of articles that were circulated to gain support for the Constitution, for certain aspects of the Bill of Rights, and for other things. Alexander Hamilton wrote a lot of them. James Madison wrote a lot of them. Federalist 46 is James Madison's writing. Read it. And I'm going to get sidetracked here. I'm just going to say it quick and back off. Read Federalist 84. Federalist 84 is Alexander Hamilton saying, the right to keep and bear arms is such a given, we don't even need an amendment to protect it. All right? That's important, especially if you talk to some of these leftists who say that the right was created in 2008. Alexander Hamilton missed that note. All right? Because Alexander Hamilton, when the nation was created and founded, thought that the right was so apparent it didn't even need the extra protection of the Second Amendment. That's Federalist 84. Anyway, let me say something. Let me say something real quick. I'm going to read this, and I hope by reading I don't lose you. But this is a little bit of me writing. There's some quotes from Madison in here, but I need to explain Madison's position on the militia. Madison showed us that armed citizens, together with the existence of subordinate governments to which the people are attached, that would be local municipalities, provide a framework in which the people can rally and defend their lives and liberty. The people could band together in militias. This is what he's writing in Federalist 46. Band together in militias, officers being appointed by those local subordinate governments. And the banding together of the people would mean something. Why? Because they're armed. Anybody remember the Iranian uprising in 2009? Those people wanted to be free. Didn't work. You know why? It's hard to secure freedom by throwing plastic bottles at armed men. And it's hard to secure freedom by throwing shoes at tanks. And it's hard to secure freedom by throwing your wallet at a whole platoon of armed people. That's why it didn't work. And what Madison is saying is, won't be that way here. Won't be that way here because you folks are armed and you can band together. You'll select an officer from your municipality. That officer will lead you. You'll come together with other officers, other municipalities. Your strength will increase. Your militia will have teeth because you're armed. Now you're wondering, what in the world? Why is he talking about the militia? I'm going to tell you why. Because the same people who are running for president right now, who want to take your AR-15, who want to take your AK-47, who want to license you, who want you to have to go through an enhanced background check or a TSA-style interview before you can buy a gun, those same people all believe that the right to keep and bear arms was created in 2008, right? And they also believe that because the Second Amendment contains the phrase militia, then it's talking about a collective right, not an individual one. Well, if you read Madison, what you understand, and this is completely contrary to what the left thinks, the militia is actually a basis for individual gun ownership. Because if I don't have guns, like I say, I'll come together like the Iranians did. What am I going to do? Use a slingshot? That's stupid. Madison said these folks have strength because they have arms. I'm paraphrasing him, but that was his point. So that's why I'm talking about it. Don't be scared when you're talking about the Second Amendment. Just because that first phrase says a well-regulated militia, don't be scared and take a defensive posture when you're explaining it. The first phrase, a well-regulated militia, and that latter portion, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, they're not doing this. They're doing this. Because I have to have the guns for the militia to to be of any point whatsoever. All right? And if you think, well, that sounds nice, well, just study the American Revolution. That's the chance you get. When those redcoats rolled into the South, what killed them? Those Southerners were all armed. They were all armed. And that's what did it. And they were able to band together, and they were strong because armed. All right? Now, I've told you what the Second Amendment does. Protects that individual right. Let me tell you what the Second Amendment doesn't do. And you've probably already figured it out, but it's important. Second Amendment does not create a right. Now, some of you are going, why do you bother saying that? That's obvious. But to some of you, it isn't. And my editor at Breitbart, Alex Marlowe, he always tells me, be redundant, be redundant. That's the only way some of us learn. He's saying it about himself. He's saying it about me. He's saying it about you. So I say it over again. Second Amendment does not create a right. If you fall into the trap of believing it creates a right, you need to, when you get home on Monday, go ahead and order your leg irons and let them know how many rations you expect a day, because slavery is not far off for you. All right? When John Locke wrote, before the Declaration of Independence was written, when he wrote the things I read, it's because nature taught him we have rights that come from God, not government. When William Bradford wrote what he wrote about absolute rights, making the same point, if the United States had never existed, I, as a man, would have a right to keep and bear arms. Because I didn't get it from our president, I got it from our God, right? And you got to get that in your mind. If you don't embrace that, if you don't embrace that, really, you're in a hopeless state. You kid yourself for a while, but you don't have any foundation. You don't have any foundation for your rights. And your every right is up for a vote if you don't believe that. See, at some point, we have a Supreme Court that's looking better and better. That's a little encouragement for you and for me. With Gorsuch, with Kavanaugh, we're hoping we got 5-4 pro-gun. We're hoping we get another pick, right? But guess what? Even if all of that happens, one day that court's going to make the wrong decision. Now, do our rights go away because the court says so? See? Ooh, tricky. They don't if they're given by God. See, that's what I'm saying. We have to understand the source of our rights is outside. It's outside of the economy and the mechanism of our government altogether. It's outside of it. That's where freedom lies. Government, our government particularly, was framed to protect those rights, and anything it does that infringes rather than protects, well, that's not simply a usurpation of its duty. It's a failure to do its duty. And that's why it's so important that you vote and you elect the kind of people that understand these things and can run the government the way it is supposed to be run. All right? Rights such as those... Rights, that was perfect. Makes me want to be on a horse, except I'm scared of horses. I got bit by one once. I couldn't shoot him. No, I didn't bite him back. I think I cried. I don't think I cried. I was scared to death. I think he bit me and kicked me. True story. Anyway, these rights come from God. And you think about what William Bradford said. When he said we possess absolute rights, if you remember the tail end of what I read, he said that man possesses these rights whether he is out of society or in it. Dude, that's important. Because that means whether I have a written amendment that protects them or says so, whether I have a constitution that protects them or says so, whether I have a government that protects them or says so, whether that happens or not, I have the rights. They're given by God through nature at birth. This is why Thomas Jefferson used the word inalienable in the Declaration. And I'm sorry that I keep saying the Declaration every time I mention Jefferson, But I always worry that people think I get the Bill of Rights and the Declaration confused. I don't. I'm using them both on purpose. They're very important. Because it's in the Declaration that Jefferson set forth that overarching presentation of individual rights, and then that was fleshed out in the Bill of Rights. But when Jefferson called them inalienable, what he means is they can't be separated from me. They're part of my humanity. They're part of your humanity. Right? I got a couple of dogs at home. I saw a couple of dogs in here, and they're good looking too. But guess what? Dogs don't have inalienable rights. Humans do. Humans have inalienable rights because of the way we were created and the purpose for which we were created. And you just got to understand it. Literally, freedom is woven into our humanity. A hunger for it is woven in there. And it's expressed through these rights. Now you think about the things we just discussed. And then when I say this name, you're going to laugh. And I didn't aim for it to work this way, but I knew it was going to work this way. Beto O'Rourke. Here's what old Beto said round about a week ago. No, it wasn't even a full week. It was 5 days. He said, no, it wasn't even 5 days. It was three. He said, when the Second Amendment was adopted and ratified, it took 3 minutes to reload your musket. I don't know that the founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution, those that pursued the Second Amendment, could have envisioned a weapon designed for war being available to private citizens. Of course, he's talking about the AR-15. Now, I want you to think about this. You have to just stop and think. We're tempted to have an emotional response. Don't. Stop and think. When Beto says that kind of stuff, think about it. Because what he's saying is that the rights protected by the Second Amendment are dependent on the tools to exercise that amendment that the founding fathers could see or that they could envision. And if they couldn't envision it or see it, well, then it's not protected. Now, you may not see the danger in that, so let me help you out. If I apply that to our other rights, let's say the First Amendment, you figure our founding fathers foresaw 3D printers? You figure they foresaw the internet or text messages on 5G? None of that. I could keep going, but I've made the point already. See, if we're going to play Beto's game, then I can destroy the First Amendment pretty easy, too. Second Amendment's easy. Third Amendment's easy. We can find ways to destroy all the rights protected or all the protections of these rights. All right? Just back up and think logically when he speaks. All right? And also think about it this way. Beto talked about that musket that took 3 minutes. And then he said, I bet they couldn't foresee weapons of war. What's he think the musket was? What does he think we killed all those redcoats with? We killed them with muskets. It's a fact. You all don't. This doesn't matter. I probably shouldn't say it. I'm going to say it. Doesn't matter, but I'm going to say it. I have a PhD in military history. I have a master's in U.S. history. I read a ton on the Revolutionary War period. It was one of the periods I studied. I'm going to tell you what. The guns that were protected when the Second Amendment was written were all weapons of war. They were all weapons of war. I've got a friend who is a former SEAL Team 3 member, and I won't say his name. He lives in this city. And the last time we were together, he said, you know what you need to do? And I go, what? He goes, you need to use one of your articles to remind people that if we don't have a weapon at least close to what that army has or that whoever that military has, they're going to run roughshod over us because they got drones from 10,000 feet. He's listing all the weaponry they have. He said the gap between what we have and what they have is so immense it's unbelievable. The left doesn't understand any of this, all right? And like I said, they definitely don't understand that the weapons that we owned at the time the Second Amendment was ratified were all weapons of war. All right? That's very important. Folks, let me say this. O'Rourke also said this. This was maybe 5 days ago, that the Second Amendment, the rights it protects, are not absolute. Again, I've already covered William Bradford. But here's how I want you to think about this. If you read Bradford, you're going to come away with this. You're going to come away going, the God who is, or who was, and is, and always will be, that God is the source of my rights, which means my rights were and are and always will be. See, you hear these leftists talk, and they're like, I don't know if Second Amendment's supposed to apply in the 2020s. I'm not sure it's still supposed to be valid. My rights were and are and always will be. Now, again, here's good news. Kavanaugh knows this. If you read any of his other decisions, he knows it. Gorsuch knows this. All right? Clarence Thomas knows this. I could go on and on. We're in a good spot right there. Now, they could surprise us, but we're in a good spot. And when Beto talks, you remember that old E.F. Hutton commercial? When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. When Beto talks, people laugh. You know that's true. All right? So that's the other good news. But I leave you with this. Read Locke. Read William Bradford. Read Thomas Jefferson. Read his Virginia, Kentucky resolutions, all right? Read James Madison, his Federalist Pages writings. Read those, because you soak up those facts, and it helps you. It helps you defend the freedom that you love, but it also keeps you from panicking sometime. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from our second president. You probably know it. John Adams, facts are stubborn things. Whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passions, it cannot change the state of facts and evidence. Now, we're a bunch of moderns living in a postmodern culture. When that means we live amongst a bunch of people who don't believe truth exists. The only cure for that is what? Truth. That's it. And when you read the truth, you understand the gun owner's not the weirdo. The weirdo is the guy that goes out consistently to eat dinner with his family and never takes a weapon to protect them. He trusts that an agent of the state will do it. That's the weirdo. Thomas Jefferson would have thought, weirdo. All right? Read, understand the facts. If you do that, folks, to me, all we're going to do is win. And I mean, as gun owners, at the polling booth, we're going to win in the theater of ideas. It's what we're going to do. We're going to do it again and again and again. Thank you all for letting me talk to you.
AWR, were you going to take any questions from the audience? At this point, if anybody has a question, come on up to this mic. We probably have time for about five questions, so the first five people in line, and if I can take host privilege... You have a PhD level of understanding, and today the attention span on the iPhone is what, 15 seconds? You know, Apple's newest product is a case for the iPhone that has a nose bulge in the back side of it for how deep people have their face on the phone. How do you promote PhD understanding in an iPhone culture?
I don't know the answer to that because... as far as the education aspect goes, somehow we got to take the colleges back. That's been the left's huge success. University and colleges for a large part are gone in a lot of ways. And we got to take those back. But I believe we educate at Breitbart. I know it's a goal when we write. I know it's a goal of mine. I'll just put it that way. Not just reporting the news, but you're trying to educate people. And every chance I get, I put in a little barb or a little something that takes it, that ties it here, that's saying, read this, read that. And I think that's what we have to do, but I also think you got to take people shooting. And it has nothing to do with education, but I've yet to take somebody shooting who didn't want to go shooting again. It's the weirdest thing. And especially people who say they grew up scared of guns. Guns have some spooky mystique. You take them shooting, and they want to know where they can buy the gun and how long is the waiting period. And then you go, hey, dude, it's Arizona. And they're like, yee-haw! So, anyway, that's it.
Two brief points and a question.
Yeah.
Point one, the left uses the internet, the left uses broadcast media to condemn our right. As far as I'm concerned, you want to claim that the Second Amendment only applies to muskets unless you write out your opinion with a quill pen and have it delivered to me by a man on horseback, your argument is invalid.
That's fair enough.
Point two, the Supreme Court offers opinions. Unlike some members of that body, there are a good many people here who have actually read and understood the Constitution.
Right.
Our opinions are just as valid. Question. We have the right to overthrow a tyrannical government. And yet, what is it going to take to trigger that? Waco didn't do it. Ruby Ridge didn't do it. Governors sending out armed individuals who value their paychecks over their principles to confiscate firearms and murder people who refuse is not doing it. In your opinion, what will it take?
Like I was saying, if you read Jefferson's Virginia-Kentucky resolutions, Kentucky-Virginia, I always get it backwards, and he talks about the nature of the compact, which is something that should be taught in the colleges and universities everywhere, and I bet it's never taught now. But there has to be some degree of abridgment of that compact that constitutes justification for that, and I'd have to get into that and read it to see, like, I don't know. What is that degree of abridgment? I don't know. But Jefferson definitely held that states have a right to secede, that the people have a right to rebel against their government. And as I said, Madison's very clear on it. But I don't know where that line is.
As a non-theist, how do you rectify your God-given rights as opposed to my natural rights?
Well, your natural rights and my natural rights are both the same. It's just that I'm going a step further to say they come from God through nature. And if you look at Thomas Jefferson, who was a deist, so he's somewhere in between, what would you want to say, agnostic and theist? Would that be fair? Or somewhere between atheist and theist? I don't know where to, I don't want to put him in a place he wasn't. But as a deist, He had a real limited view on what God can do as far as intervening in this world, but he still believed that our natural rights flowed from our Creator. And so, but I don't have a disagreement with you. Like, I don't go, well, I believe in God, so I have natural rights, and you don't believe in God, so you don't. No. I want to be clear on that. I just think the difference between you and I is I go a step further, and that my rights originate with God, flow through nature to man, whereas you would just say they come from nature to man. I would look at that and think, well, where did the rights come from? Nature doesn't have volition. That, you know, it doesn't have ability to think and create. That's just how I would think. But you and I would have no hostility between each other on it.
Thanks for what you do.
I wanted
to mention that I think your faith in this new Supreme Court maybe misplaced for this reason. 1934 NFA, 1938 FFA, 1939 U.S. v. Miller, 1968 GCA, the 1986 FOPA Act, which froze machine gun sales.
Right.
1989, Bush 1 says import of cosmetically offensive weapons, banned. We get the NICS, then we get an AWB for 10 years, a cosmetically offensive weapons ban for 10 years in this country. Then in 2008, Scalia says something very curious in three words, dangerous and unusual.
Right.
He has a characterization of those weapons, evil black rifles, cosmetically offensive, whatever the case may be, where he's opening the door for the feds to come in and say, no, we don't want you to. And all I'm saying is this. Shall not be infringed to me is rather categorical, rather clear. Yet that whole raft of federal gun legislation I just mentioned is Supreme Court certified because right. It hasn't been challenged. It hasn't been eliminated. It hasn't been destroyed. What? And I don't think that Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, especially with Roberts on the court, have it in them to do the right thing by the Second Amendment. Thank you.
Well, I'll say this. Roberts is the weak link. Yeah, you're right about that. But now Kavanaugh's been very clear on the AR-15 and its use for self-defense and its purpose. I don't fear Kavanaugh, but I know that there is a case I'm writing on this weekend that just happened in California where they didn't want it to go to court and they let a guy go. And it deals with 80% complete receivers because they're scared a lot of the rules for building your own AR-15 will be thrown out the window and you just be unlimited building and there won't be any serial number on lowers, period, throughout the country. And so they stopped it from going through because they were scared it was going to go to the Supreme Court. So, like, for everything you say, then I also see what's happening in real time. They don't publicize this stuff because establishment media doesn't want you to know. But there has been, within the last year, two cases where people should have been thrown in the pen, as far as the law goes, put in the pen. As my dad used to say, put you somewhere where they have to pump in sunshine to you. That's how far in they should have been. And they dropped their cases because they didn't want them to go to the Supreme Court because they're scared to death. The Supreme Court would overturn 50 years of gun control. That's a quote. And so, here's the deal. With all that said, the gentleman who spoke is right. Roberts could flip it on its head and turn it to a 5-4. The other way, Roberts makes me nervous. But I'm hoping... If you look at Sam Alito, I don't know if you've ever read the majority opinion in McDonald v. Chicago. I'm serious. If you just want some reading for free, get on the internet, print off the PDF, majority opinion, McDonald v. Chicago. Alito will say in there, the central component of the Second Amendment is what? The right to self-defense. Almost everybody misses that. Almost everybody will say the central component of the Second Amendment is private gun ownership. No. You own guns so you can carry out that central component, right? And your ability to own guns is protected, don't get me wrong, because the tools to execute the central component are protected. But the central issue is self-defense, and out of that grows my ability to defend my life, my property, and my liberty from government onslaught. So I'd read Alito. But Alito's the kind of guy that gives me hope. That's what I was saying. I got a field. I'm sorry.
Hello.
Hello.
So first of all, I want to say I'm a Christian. I understand your argument. But my peers on my same age or younger, usually, especially when you're on college, will not accept your arguments, especially for being a God, Second Amendment being a God-driven right, because it's not even... They're not even considering the existence of God or even despise God to right. a point.
Right.
How are you going to win them in a philosophical manner if they don't even believe in the same pretty much
base? I hear what you're saying.
And second question is that, hopefully quick, do you trust Trump to do the right thing? Because I honestly think that he is not as pro-gun as it seems, especially with the proponents for the red flag laws and bans of the bump stocks. Bans of bump stocks is a big thing for us because that actually opens up for redefining every single gun into a machine gun, even shotguns.
Right. I like both those questions. That goes back to this gentleman's question, too, or comment. I'll say this. I think when you talk to them, when you talk to the people to whom you speak on the college campus, talk to them about natural rights. And then you can talk about later, where did those rights come from? Where did those rights come from? But you can just talk about natural rights. You can read that in Locke. You can read that everywhere in the people that Jefferson and Madison read. And they're going to be interested in natural rights, because the right to keep and bear arms, the right to self-defense, these aren't my only natural rights. Right to free speech, right to freedom of religion, right to assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievance, right to be secure in my persons, houses, papers, and effects, right to use my property as I wish. The government can't tell me, they can't come up and do this and that. I'm looking at Amendment 3. I'm just saying. So maybe don't start with the Second Amendment. Maybe start with the natural rights of the First Amendment. And then what we have to understand, the Bill of Rights is of a cloth. Every right in that is an individual natural right. So, and as far as your Trump goes, Trump can scare you every now and then. Some of it is his deal making, because he comes out and he sucks these people in. And he makes them think they're going to get everything, and then they get nothing. If you look at this most recent deal, they had already moved past AR-15s, and they were talking about other guns they were going to ban, and they had moved past background checks and talked about other gun controls they're going to get, and what'd they get? Nothing. And you knew they were going to get nothing when Mitch McConnell comes out and goes, well, because he had said assault weapons ban and this and that will be front and center, and then he comes out all of a sudden and goes, well, we're going to see what the president says. And I knew right then, this stuff is over. Now, we'll say to you, Trump, we'll say things that spook you. And I'm not, this answer is going to sound smart-aleck, and I'm not being smart-aleck. But while you were talking, my first reaction was, he's more pro-gun than Hillary. And I'm not being smart-aleck, but what I'm saying is, I believe we're in the best place in which we could be. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't want someone even more pro-gun, but I didn't see that person. Ted Cruz would have probably been more pro-gun. I don't think he could have won the election. He didn't win it. But he's a great man, and I love Ted Cruz, and I'm glad he's in the Senate, because I don't know if you all watched, but when Attorney General Barr had his people talk to senators 2 weeks ago to try to sell them on gun control, it was Ted Cruz that hopped up and walked out. He wasn't going to have any of it. And so Ted Cruz is right where he needs to be. But to answer your question, that's the only kind of man with views I would rather have than Trump, because he is next level on guns. But I don't know that we have anybody else that can do it. Trump has the ability to stand up to the heat. You ever think about that man wakes up every day and what they're saying about him? I'm just saying, how does this man handle this? You know, and yet what's he do? He'll pop up. We hope there's not another mass shooting, but if there is one, what'll happen? Trump will pop up afterward if it was a gun-free zone, and what will he say? If someone had been armed, he could have taught them that bullets go both ways. He'll just say something common sense like that that no one else alive would ever say. So for the fear he causes, he's also a great man. And I believe he's the man for our time. That's just my opinion. Thank you all.